Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airways. This is the show that's the Throwdown on Thursdays, the Doc Talk podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Dr. Greg Roscoe. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, playing a little co-host till a guest gets in, John Benergi, in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, 60 minutes goes by quick. blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcast, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay that groundwork down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, Doc the Threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And this should be one hell of a topic tonight. He's been in here before, Dr. John Benergi, as we wait for him. And you know what? Speaking of the devil, he's in.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate the beautiful introduction. I'd like to say good evening to our listeners tonight. People can get a hold of me at gjrmd308@outlook.com. And, you know, things are great. Pittsburgh, 47 degrees today in Pittsburgh. So we're seeing a lot of melting, a lot of slush, but far better than what we had last week in the 4, 5, 6 degree area. So things are super. And, you know, we have several excellent guests lined up as we're going into February. You know, this evening, we've got an international urologist. He's been a friend of the show, Dr. John Benergi. And our topic tonight is a very interesting, and I have gotten several emails, you know, with regard to certain topics, and this is one that I see a little bit of a recurrence. The topic has to do with male sexual dysfunction. You know, another word for that or words for that are erectile dysfunction. And, you know, it has a little bit to do with the male functioning in a sexual act. And there's nothing, you know, taboo about it. I think it's things we can talk about. And I think we can give our listeners some interesting facts on how it works, who it hits, you know, why does it happen? And I'd like to start, Dr. John, how are you this evening?
Hey, good evening, Mark, and good evening, Dr. Roscoe. Great to be back on the show, and Happy New Year to all of you. It's a little delayed, but yeah, this is the first time I've been on the show.
For making it. Yeah. And, you know, we know that, you know, as far as our show times, we've been in a little bit of flux with different timings. And then, John, we're in this 5:30 slot for drive home, so to speak. And, you know, we're catching our East Coast listeners driving home, as well as early West Coast listeners driving home. So, indeed, I think Mark's making some very good decisions helping us reach our listeners overall. You know, Dr. John, with regard to the topic, you know, male sexual dysfunction, and I know you see that, you know, you talk about it a lot, and, you know, again, the other name for this is erectile dysfunction. Do you want to talk a little bit about it and, you know, how this comes about, how it affects the anatomy, you know, in a male, and then as we get through the show, maybe we can talk about how do we go ahead and help solve this problem, especially in younger males. Do you want to pick up the ball, Dr. John?
Sure, Dr. Roscoe. Thank you once again. Yeah, so when we talk about male sexual dysfunction, there are a couple of things. If we just want to look at a broad umbrella, there's, of course, erectile dysfunction, which is the inability to achieve or maintain an erection satisfactory for sexual performance. But there's also other things like lack of libido, there's premature ejaculation, and all of those broadly come under male sexual dysfunction. But like you said, the most common one which we talk about and is which is synonymous with male sexual dysfunction his erectile dysfunction.
And
there was actually a,
John, you know, with regard to just kind of clarifying it, you know, we do have, we've talked about, and again, I know you talk about other dysfunction being decreased libido. We also, as you mentioned, have ejaculatory disorders.
Correct.
But it seems the one, John, the one that I've received a lot of information or a lot of questions on was, you know, what happens in erectile dysfunction? You know, we know that the male organ is really a complex organ, and it does require, you know, a lot of different activities from blood flow to neural to hormonal stimulation to get the penis to work well. And again, can you touch a little bit on that, maybe looking at the anatomy, John?
Correct. Absolutely. So the male organ of the penis basically serves two functions. One is, of course, to pass urine. The other one is for an erection. So looking at it anatomically, on the top of the penis, there are two cylindrical smooth muscles, which are called the corpora cavernosa. And that is basically blood-filled smooth muscle. And there's an artery which comes from the pelvis, from the inside of the pelvis, called the internal iliac artery, and branches of that go to the penis. Now, the artery which goes to the penis also supplies these two erectile bodies, so to speak, the corpora cavernosa. And when this is full of blood, then the penis gets erect. There's also a mechanism where the blood drains away. So after arousal and after the sexual act, the penis becomes flaccid, and that is because the blood is draining away. Now, sometimes you can get erectile dysfunction when we talk about the vascular or a problem
yes.
due to the blood vessels. There can be two types. One is, of course, the most obvious type is the vascular part, where the blood vessel coming into the penis is compromised. And that typically would be something similar to a heart attack. So, example, if you think about the heart being a muscle and is supplied by the coronary artery, so if the coronary artery develops a block, that can cause a heart attack. So similarly, erectile dysfunction is caused by a block maybe in the branch of the penile artery or the internal iliac artery. So, in fact, a lot of times we say erectile dysfunction might be a surrogate for coronary artery disease, because we know if the arteries
wow.
in the pelvis are getting affected, the coronary arteries are approximately the same size, and the same disease process might be prevalent throughout the body. And therefore, we say erectile dysfunction should be thought of, especially in older people, it is a surrogate for
wow.
coronary artery disease. Yeah.
John, I think it's a very, very good observation. And, John, you know, if we talk about coronary artery disease, diabetes, hypertension, you know, even obesity, smoking, they have an effect on the arterial system, correct?
Absolutely. So everything which are risk factors for coronary artery disease, like you mentioned, obesity, hypertension, uncontrolled
yeah.
high blood pressure, uncontrolled diabetes, high cholesterol, smoking, lack of exercise, and so on and so forth, are causes also for erectile dysfunction. In fact, when we evaluate for erectile dysfunction, we cover all these topics. So it would look like we seem to be evaluating for somebody with heart disease, but it in effect, the basic evaluation is very, very similar to what you would do for somebody with heart disease.
That's
one component of the vascular part. The other erectile dysfunction due to a vascular problem could be where the veins are draining out the blood too soon. Remember, I talked to you about the
yes.
artery coming in, the vein taking the blood away. So sometimes there can be what's called a vein leak or a venous leak, where the artery is okay, the smooth muscle is getting filled with blood, but it's draining out very soon because there's a leak in one of the venous channels. And because of that, the erection occurs, but you're not able to maintain, or one cannot maintain the erection because of the venous leak phenomenon. And that's the other kind of vascular erectile dysfunction. Then,
Sean,
of course,
yes,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to mention, with regard to, you know, being in a diagnostic position, are these maladies of the veins and arteries, are you able to diagnose it with any testing, or is it more from historical data that the patient would give you?
It's now available. There is something called an MRI capnography. Basically, we inject dye into this part, and you follow it with the MRI, and there are calculated times where you think it should be within the penis.
Wow.
And you can calculate and see how quickly it is draining out. Those are, of course, more complex studies which are done. And venous leak erectile dysfunction is fairly uncommon. So we would rule out all other causes, like the obvious vascular cause, and then neurogenic cause due to problems of the nerves. And causes due to problems of the nerves could be in two situations. One is, for example, somebody has paraplegia or quadriplegia due to trauma, say a road traffic accident or trauma due to sport, and they have a spinal cord injury. They will have erectile dysfunction also, because the nerves which you call the sympathetic nerves, which are responsible for the erection. Those are hampered. And we also see a lot of neurogenic erectile dysfunction in patients who've undergone either pelvic surgery, the most common being prostate cancer surgery. That's why when we do prostate cancer surgery now with the robot, we talk about nerve spare, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to save or spare as much of the pelvic plexus of nerves which go and supply the penis. So patients who've had pelvic surgery, either for prostate cancer or maybe for rectal cancer, or who've had radiation to the prostate, can also get erectile dysfunction. And that's the neurogenic kind of erectile dysfunction.
And, you know, John, along that line, I know we're going through all the causes. You know, typically, if one has had some type of a stroke, a spinal cord or a back injury, or even things like multiple sclerosis, that could affect this performance also, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And not only those who have MS, like you said, those who have MS or spinal cord injuries would have erectile dysfunction. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And that's what we call neurogenic.
That's the neurogenic causes. And, you know,
correct.
As far as, you know, you mentioned about doing prostate surgery, which, you know, is a very common surgery being done today. John, how do you counsel your patients ahead of time with regard to being able to have an erection after that surgery? Do you talk to them about the potential they may not be able to have sexual activity, or how do you counsel them, John, on that topic?
That's a great question. We always counsel patients. So the first thing we tell patients is, the older you are, the less likely you are to get good quality erection. And even if patients were not having prostate cancer surgery, we know older men have less erections, and that's because of lower testosterone as you get older, and also vascular problems. As you get older, you're more likely to get heart disease, and the arteries harden. And so there have been studies to see that erectile dysfunction, even in patients who were not undergoing prostate cancer surgery, was more common in the 65 and above age group. So one I tell patients, if you are above 65, the chance that you are going to have erectile dysfunction is fairly high, about 50%. We also tell them, depending on the type of cancer, if the cancer is more aggressive, our primary goal in treating the prostate cancer is, of course, to get them cancer-free. So if the prostate cancer is more aggressive and it does not allow me safely to spare the nerves, we might take the nerves on one side because we want to go wide and do a good cancer surgery. The other thing we do with patients is we give them a questionnaire. It's called the SHIM score. The acronym stands for Sexual Health Inventory for Men, S-H-I-M. So that's a questionnaire. It's got five. It's a modified questionnaire. The original questionnaire is 25 questions, but this will be modified.
Okay.
There are five questions, and each of those questions are from 0 to 5, and we ask patients, how confident are you that currently you can have an erection? How confident are you that the erection will last, and so on and so forth? And then we score their question, the answers to their questions on the questionnaire. So anybody, the higher the score, the better. So a perfect score would be 5 into 5, which is 25. So we tell patients, if you are 20 and above, the chance of erectile dysfunction is less, whereas if you're 16 and below, the chance that you will have erectile dysfunction post-surgery is higher because you already have erectile dysfunction. Right,
John,
right.
You know, just interestingly, I've had several emails through the show here, John, and I just got a very interesting one, and a listener says, I bicycle a lot. And my family doctor told me that I could be developing erectile dysfunction from the ongoing bicycling. Have you run across that?
Yeah, it's known, and especially it's in skinnier people with a bicycle seat, which is not very comfortable. And of course, people who are bicycling like more than maybe 10, 20 miles every day. For the guy who's just doing it for exercise, maybe a couple of miles every day or every other day, it's not so much. But yes, it's known to cause, and the mechanism there is believed to be pressure to the bulbar artery, which is one of the other arteries which supply the penis. So the penis is supplied by a couple of arteries. One is called the dorsal penile artery. One is the cavernosal artery. And there's also something called the bulbar artery, which goes through the urethra and supplies the penis in a retrograde fashion. And because the bulbar artery is lower down to where the seat of the bicycle would be touching you,
yes.
prolonged compression, like I described, somebody who's bicycling 20 miles every day, prolonged compression could cause compression to the bulbar artery and
give them a problem.
And that could cause a problem in an already compromised situation.
No, very good. John, I have another one, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
The listener's asking that he's been on testosterone therapy for several years. And overall, he notices, even with that therapy, he still has erectile problems. What are your thoughts on that, John?
So the testosterone therapy helps for the hormonal part of erectile dysfunction. So if a patient has just low hormones and that alone is causing erectile dysfunction, the testosterone therapy might help. But a lot of times, as patients get older especially, you not only have hormonal, but you also have vascular. So
yes.
The testosterone does nothing to the vascular component. So I believe this particular person, in addition to the testosterone, might need a workup for the vascular component, because that's where I think his erectile dysfunction might be originating from.
Very good answer. John, you know, we talk about the four pillars. you know, listening to the history of our patients, doing an examination, being diagnostic, and then decision making. You know, when someone comes in, is there, you know, you listen, of course, to this story. John, examination-wise, are you able to detect anything on examination, or is that a very difficult, you know, one to go ahead and perceive, whether it's, you know, an obstruction in the artery system or the venous system? How do you handle that?
So one of the things in the history we always want to ask for, because we are talking about the blood supply to the penis, so we want to see what other organs are supplied by those same blood vessels. So if we go back to anatomy, the iliac vessels, the internal iliac vessels, some of the gluteal or the muscles of the butt, the gluteus maximus and minimus, those are supplied by branches of the internal iliac artery. So if we are thinking that they might be a problem with the internal iliac artery, we ask patients this question. It's called gluteal claudication. When you walk for a long distance, does your butt hurt? Do you find that you have severe pain in your butt and you've got to stop and you've got to sit down before you can walk again?
Yeah.
So if they have that, that is, again, like a surrogate saying that the blood vessel of which the penile artery is a branch of, the main blood vessel may be affected. So that's a very important history we ask for.
Very good.
So it's called
gluteal claudication. And, you know, John, examination-wise,
yes.
I mean, you're examining, you know, again, what do you look for? You know, are you examining for hernias? Are you examining for discoloration? You know, what do you look for?
So in the examination, one thing we obviously are looking for is pulses. Are all the pulses felt? Are the carotid felt? Are the radial and the brachial pulse felt? Can I feel the femoral pulse in the leg? And if there's a low pulse somewhere where you can't feel it very well, that's one indication that they might be what we call atherosclerosis of the blood vessels.
Yes.
And I keep going back to this because this is a generalized disease. If it's affecting the head and the coronary arteries, it's also affecting the lower limbs and the artery to the penis. So that's an important piece of examination which we must do. Locally, we are also looking at things like sometimes there's this condition called Peyronie's disease where it's a scar tissue or a plaque which is found on the surface of the penis, and patients with Peyronie's disease can also have erectile dysfunction. So we're looking at that. We examine the penis and we see if there's any evidence of that, if there's any curvature of the penis.
Yes.
Then we're also looking at things like discoloration of the legs. If the legs look pale, if one leg looks paler than the other, that means the blood flow to that leg may not be good enough. So that's what we look in examination. Now, there is something called PIPE, P-I-P-E, or pharmacologically induced penile erection. That's a test which used to be done earlier where we would give a small dose of something called papaverin, which is basically a medication to relax the smooth muscles, and it relaxes the smooth muscles in the penis, and we would see if patients get erection with that. And if they get erection with that, then we at least know the other systems are okay, the hormonal part is okay, and it just might only be a vascular problem. So that's what we would do for examination.
Good. And, you know, that's excellent. You know, John, do you ever do an ultrasound of the groin or the femoral vessels or anything like that? Is that ever an indication using ultrasound to look at the arteries and veins? Is that at all diagnostic, or is that a very difficult, you know, situation to go ahead and try to diagnose using different testings?
Yeah, we can use ultrasound, and we use ultrasound with what we call Doppler. So the Doppler gives us the flow in the blood vessels. So we can use ultrasound Doppler to look at the blood vessels in the pelvis. We can also use an ultrasound Doppler to look at the arteries in the penis, and this is not done at every place. It's very very specific and specialized. Not all ultrasound techs would be able to do this just because it's not very commonly done. It's not a routine run of the mill ultrasound. But yes, an ultrasound with a Doppler can be done to look for either a narrow blood vessel or a blood vessel which has plaques or calcium deposition in it, and it can look at the amount of blood flow into the penis, yes.
Excellent. John, you know, as far as we're talking about this disease, what is the prevalence of it? You know, how often are you seeing it? Where are you seeing it? You know, is it in our population under 40 or is it over 60? John, who does it hit?
So this typically hits the older people as you get older, above 50. But there was a good study about 30 years ago called the Massachusetts Male Aging Study. And they just looked at some 1,800 men, and they said, let's look at men aged between 40 and 70. And there they found, astonishingly, a total prevalence of almost 50%, almost half of those men in the 40 to 70 age group had some form of erectile dysfunction. Now, not all erectile dysfunction is the same. Some might have a mild erectile dysfunction. And this, again, we get to classify based on that SHIM score. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah, we talked about the SHIM score, yeah.
Right. So the lower the SHIM score, the most severe is erectile dysfunction. The higher the SHIM score, the closer it is to 20-25, it's less erectile dysfunction. But this was astonishing. And that's why erectile dysfunction, as you grow older, it's more prevalent, but it can affect younger people also. And if it affects younger people, we generally want to rule out early diabetes. We know more and more younger people either have type 1 diabetes mellitus, or what we call maturity onset diabetes of the young. So that again could be a surrogate for new onset diabetes.
Got it.
Some patients might be an indicator.
Correct.
Some patients might be really young, let's say 30, 35, 40, and come to our office with erectile dysfunction. And in those patients, most of the cause is psychogenic, like say somebody is having problems with their work or problem with their spouse or partner, and because of that,
sure,
they're not able to get an erectile dysfunction. Because I always tell patients, the greatest sex organ is the brain, right? You've got to be in the right frame. You've got to be in the right emotional balance at the time you're trying to get intimate with the partner, and if that's not in sync, you might experience erectile dysfunction. So those are psychogenic.
Wow.
Now there are certain drugs which can also cause erectile dysfunction. Most common drug to cause erectile dysfunction is actually beta blockers, which is very commonly used for heart disease, for hypertension. So
yes,
a beta blocker called propranolol is a very common cause of erectile dysfunction. So that's the other thing we ask patients in the history. We want to take a good history of the medication. Have they been on beta blockers? Has something been changed in their blood pressure medication? Are there any psychogenic drugs? Because a lot of psychogenic drugs, say patients are taking drugs for depression or for psychosis, they can cause erectile dysfunction as a side effect.
John, that's excellent. And, you know, very good information. And, you know, I want to get into a little bit about ejaculatory problems also with erectile dysfunction. But I would like to go to the studio in L.A. Mr. Mancini does have a lot of questions coming in, John. So if you're ready, we're going to go ahead back to the studio in L.A., and let's have Mr. Mancini start to give us some questions from our listeners tonight. Mr. Mancini, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, let me throw a couple because it's an interesting topic to break down. Adam coming in from Winnipeg, Manitoba, first-time listener listening live out there. Great, Adam, to be a part of it. He said, what is the fastest way to cure erectile dysfunction? Interesting question.
Yeah. So the
Dr.
first,
John.
Yes. So the
Go
first
ahead.
Thing would be, the first thing would be to quantify what the erectile dysfunction is. We would give every person a SHIM score and find out how severe it is. Then we would ask, obviously, a history and make sure there aren't any factors which could be promoting that. For example, uncontrolled diabetes, uncontrolled high blood pressure. So patients who have those uncontrolled diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity need to make those lifestyle changes and correct that. Because erectile dysfunction, I like to think of erectile dysfunction as a symptom of some other underlying greater
disease.
Yes. So you don't want to just treat the symptom. You want to get to the root of the disease. So you need to do all those. But if you're looking at a quick fix kind of erectile dysfunction, I want it to work well tonight, for example. So the most common drugs on the market which we give are what we call PDE5 or phosphodiesterase E5 inhibitors. The most common one, which everyone knows, is Viagra. We start patients on Viagra, or there are other things like Tadalafil, which is the next generation, there's Levitra, there's a whole host of this medication. When
yes.
we put patients on Viagra, I like to tell patients that you must be sure you don't take a medication called nitrate for heart disease, because there have been a lot of patients in the early days when Viagra was used, patients were on nitrates, they used Viagra. What Viagra also does, which is sildenafil, it relaxes the smooth muscles, and it increases the blood flow to the penis, but it also decreases, by relaxing the smooth muscle, it decreases blood flow to the heart. And somebody who's already on another medication which does that or dilates the blood vessels to the heart can have a heart attack. And a lot of patients died in the early when Viagra was introduced. A lot of patients died because of that. So you got to be very careful about what medication you're on. So I would ask these patients before they take Viagra, make sure you're not on a nitrate, which can be life-threatening. It could kill you. So you've got to use it. And then I tell patients, when you take the Viagra, start off with the lowest dose possible and then slowly ramp up. And with Viagra, it's kind of, you've got to take it on an empty stomach, or you've got to take it at least 4 hours without a meal. So you've got to be very, very regimental in the way you take it for it to act. Because if you take it just after a heavy meal, it doesn't get absorbed. And then you might be taking the Viagra and seeing it's not acting because it's not getting absorbed
sure.
as well.
And, John, you know, along that line, where should you buy the Viagra? You know, what you see all kind of different companies talking about buying it for virtually nothing online. You know, how cautious do our listeners have to be about buying Viagra? Can you help us with that?
Yeah. So most of the original Pfizer molecule Viagra is very good. Now they have been generic Viagra, which is also used, which I think is okay as long as it's from a good generic, because back where I come from in India, we don't get the not that we don't get, but the original Pfizer Viagra is very expensive, but a lot of other companies make similar to Viagra, which is sildenafil, and they work pretty okay. I think the most important part is to know how to take it. Take it in an empty stomach, take it or 4 hours after food, and you've got to take it 1 hour before intercourse, and you've got to finish intercourse or finish being intimate by about 2 or 3 hours.
And, John, that's kind of the half-life is about 2 or 3 hours for one Viagra pill?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And, John, you know, if Mr. Mancini may have another one. John, I have another question here that they're asking. If I can interrupt, Mark. They're talking about nitric oxide. How does nitric oxide affect this blood flow in the penis? What is the story about that?
So nitric oxide in 2000 was known as the molecule of the century. And nitric oxide is one of the most powerful vasodilators. So it dilates the blood vessels, and it dilates smooth muscle also. So the way the Viagra works is through that. One of the things it does, it blocks this thing called phosphodiesterase, and that increases the amount of nitric oxide within the blood vessel and within the smooth muscle of the penis. So it increases the level of nitric oxide, and that causes more blood, and relaxing of the smooth muscles causes more blood into the penis, and that's how it causes erection.
So that overall, this is a very sophisticated physiological function of the male penis, correct?
Correct. Correct, absolutely. And they are certain drugs, over-the-counter drugs, called nitric oxide promoters. They kind of say that they help the body to produce more nitric oxide. And that's one thing which I've seen being used. It might help in milder forms of erectile dysfunction, but not in somebody who's got severe erectile dysfunction.
Very good. Mr. Mancini, do you have another listener for us?
Yeah, basically Julie coming in from Escondido, and then I'll give it back to you guys and come back to me at the 6:25 mark so we can wrap and preview next week. She says, why does my man lose his hard on? Wow, that's an interesting one.
Doctor?
Yeah. Yes. Hi, Judy. I don't know how old your partner is, but some of the things which we talked about, he definitely needs to go and see his primary care doctor initially. If he's older, then I would look at things like control of sugar, control of his blood pressure, and if all those are fine, then we could evaluate and maybe treat him appropriately. So it all depends on a number of factors like we talked about. Age is also a factor. So the older, and I tell patients all the time, we've got to be realistic when we think about erectile dysfunction. We cannot, a 65, 70-year-old cannot expect the same quality of erections as he had when he was a teenager or a 20-year-old. So with some of those realizations, I think it's more way to treat it, you know, because sometimes we are looking at literature and magazines and movies, and some things look very unrealistic. That's just for the movies, and we shouldn't be comparing our partner to that person.
And, you know, Dr. John, do you do couples counseling with this kind of a problem? You know, are you talking to the couple about what the circumstances are, what needs to be done? Here are some pointers. I mean, do you have staff that go over this with a erectile dysfunction couple?
Absolutely. So most of the time, patients come alone for the first time, but I always tell them, for your next appointment, I want your partner here with you because there are other things we need to talk about, not only erectile dysfunction-wise, but we also need to know how are you as a partner? Do you have problems at home, say, with your relation or with kids or with work? And all of those could negatively impact erectile dysfunction. So we always ask patients to bring the partner for the second appointment. And yes, we counsel them. Our nurse talks to the women separately, and,
sure.
and then we talk to both of them together as a couple.
Wonderful. I mean, a great counseling and needs done. You know, another topic that maybe is part and parcel of this also, Dr. John, is decreased libido. You know, if one has a decreased libido or sexual desire, does that also play into this erectile dysfunction?
Yes. So that's the hormonal aspect. If somebody has a low testosterone level for whatever reason, either aging or certain medication could cause low testosterone, that can cause erectile dysfunction. So in people who are less than 40 with erectile dysfunction, that's one area which we are always looking at. So apart from thinking about psychogenic causes or medication, we also check for testosterone and see what those levels are. Because sometimes low libido due to low testosterone may just need to be treated and the erectile dysfunction might correct itself.
Got it. You know, with regard to along the same line, you know, if we talk about ejaculatory disorders, and, you know, they do range from premature to delayed to maybe even a retrograde situation. John, is that part of all this, or is that another topic?
That is part of ejaculatory disturbances. The most common cause of the ejaculatory disturbances are premature ejaculation, where patients ejaculate too quickly. Typically, it's called ejaculatory latency time, and anything less than one to 1.5 minutes, that's the actual definition. But patients can have delayed ejaculation, can have anejaculation, which means nothing is coming out or no ejaculate, a very small amount of ejaculate. Then they can have painful ejaculation, and all of those need to be treated and diagnosed on their own merit. But they are a completely different class from erectile dysfunction.
No, very good. It's part, you know, probably you hear about it. And, John, I have another email here that says, you know, how does the prostate get involved with ejaculatory dysfunction? Is there an issue with the prostate causing this to be a problem also?
Typically, The prostate, like benign enlargement of the prostate, does not cause ejaculatory dysfunction on its own, but it's more correlation, because both these diseases are diseases of older people. So as you get older, you do have prostate problems, and as you get older, you do have ejaculatory, you do have erectile dysfunction. So they are more coinciding rather than
sure.
one causing the other. So BPH, or benign prostate hypertrophy, which is the most common prostate problem, does not really cause erectile dysfunction, but it can coexist with erectile dysfunction. You can have patients who have BPH and erectile dysfunction or prostate problems. The direct effect of prostate problems is more with treatment, like we discussed about prostate cancer and the different kinds of treatments. The side effect of those treatments is erectile dysfunction. So that's the only way the prostate is connected
sure.
to erectile dysfunction.
John, I have another email here from a listener down in Florida, and he asks, how long should an erection last? Is there a normal time that an erection should last without medication?
Typically, erection would last once orgasm has been achieved or patients ejaculate, the erection typically dies down because that's what physiologically happens. So sometimes it can be 6 minutes, it can be 3 minutes, it can be 10 minutes. Just depends on how long it takes to ejaculate, because most men would lose erection once ejaculation happens, because that's the terminal part of the entire orgasm sequence, which itself is a very complex thing which is happening within your body. Right. So once ejaculation is over, the erections typically go away. And then again, I tell patients don't think that you need to be compared. This is not a rat race. You know, we cannot watch movies or watch other things where abnormal things are being shown. Don't compare yourself with that, because that's not normal and it's not real. It's just made for the movies, and it's just that.
John, I think you're referring a little bit here to pornography. You know,
exactly.
Does pornography
exactly.
play a role, you know, in sex and sexual dysfunction or sexual function? Is pornography necessary, or is that a telltale sign? Does that help stimulate, or does that not help stimulate sexual function?
I think the downside of pornography is that people and partners try comparing themselves to what they watch and what they see, and then their minds are thinking, am I going to be like that? And you already are now behind the eight ball, you know? I mean, you already got your sure. Your brain on the defense, and you're not going to have a good quality erection. So I feel pornography is actually negative, has a negative impact on erection.
Beautiful. So again, you're not counseling your patients to use pornography to maintain their sexual acuity.
Absolutely not. That's one thing we tell them not to do. We tell them spend more time together, try and improve relations, make sure you do the dishes before you try and get intimate, because if you don't do dishes, you're not getting intimate, you know.
Sure.
We never tell patients that watch some pornography, because that's going to help you, because I feel, and there are studies showing that it might actually be detrimental
to that. John, you know, we've talked about, I mentioned again, you know, we talked about the four pillars, that, you know, we
yes.
listened to the history. You've done an examination. Maybe you've done some diagnostic testing. John, when it comes to decision-making here and treatment, you know, what are we looking at? You know, when do you say, hey, I think you need a penile implant? You know, you need to be on Viagra. You know, what's the treatment range here, John? You know, where do you go with your patients?
That's a great question. So we always want to start off with the least invasive to the most invasive. So we want to start off with things like lifestyle modification. Everyone who's overweight, try and lose some weight. If your sugars are not under control, try and do that. If your blood pressure is not under control, try and do that first. Along with that, if somebody has severe erectile dysfunction, which is obviously causing them problems, marital discord or problems with their partners, then we say we'll start you off with Viagra or similar things like Cialis, which are the PDE5 inhibitors. We want to start at a low dose and then slowly ramp up. And then we tell patients the way to take it, which we talked about for Viagra especially. Cialis is a little more forgiving because you can take it with food and it lasts a much longer time. It lasts as long as 18 to 25 hours. So it stays in the body for much longer. Right. So we would start with the medication. If the medication works, sometimes the medication works for some people, and then it stops working after some time. So then we tell them, what are your goals? Do you are you still sexually active? And if the answer is yes, then the next thing which can be done, there is something called a vacuum erection device, which is essentially a device which is available. We put a ring on the penis and a suction kind of situation is created and it causes erection. But you got to be careful because sometimes if you don't remove the ring within 20 to 30 minutes, that ring can cause necrosis or dying of the skin because it's so tight.
Wow.
So that's one option called a vacuum erection device. They are penile injections, which we can give, like I told you during diagnosis. We use it, but we also use a combination of different medications. And we use three or four different kinds of medications which are mixed together, and therefore they are called tri-mix for three medications and quad-mix when it's four. So these can be injected by the patient themselves. One on each side of the penis before erection, and they again can cause good quality erection. And if patients have had all of this and still have no erection, then we go to an artificial penile implant or an implantable penile prosthesis, as it's called, IPP. Now, some patients, for example, who've again had prostate cancer surgery and have had have had bad cancer disease and bilateral nodes were not able to be spared, and we know these patients will have severe erectile dysfunction. We might not go through all of these stages. We might go directly to the penile implant, but that's not the norm. The penile implant typically is left for the end of the road, so to speak. Once you've used at least one or more of the other options which I discussed.
Thank you. John, you know, I have a couple more questions that I've gotten. How frequently should one have sex? Is there a frequency that's a normal type behavior?
It again depends on age. Like you probably know, the younger you are when when we were in our 20s and we just got married or just had a partner, the frequency would be much more. Sometimes it's three or four times a day when you're in your 20s or 30s. But as you get older, I tell patients, it's not about quantity at that point in time, but it's quality, because you can get intimate with not only the actual act of intercourse, but also foreplay. And I tell patients it's very important when you're trying to treat erectile dysfunction. It's very important to have good quality foreplay. So that's more important. So there's no real number which I would say this is healthy or not, and it just depends as people get more and more busy with their lives. I mean, sometimes it might be only happening on a weekend, or it might be only happening when the kids are away, because now you've got grown kids and the living situation might be that they have
more intimacy and privacy.
Right, exactly. You know,
John, is there any damage that can occur with frequent sex involving, you know, the penis, three or four times a day, four times a week? Is there any damage that can occur to the organ?
It could, especially if it's done too often, like more than 4 or 5 times a day. One is you would not get too much ejaculate, and two, sometimes if you're not careful, there is an entity called penile fracture. It's especially with different kinds of positions, you can have this thing called penile fracture where there is a snap in an erect penis, and it's actually breaking off the lining of the penis, and there's blood flowing out. And the problem with penile fracture is it can cause erectile dysfunction later on. It can cause scar tissue and Peyronie's disease and erectile dysfunction. So you've got to be careful about the frequency and the position and so on.
Very good. John, we've covered a lot of topics here tonight. And I'd like Mr. Mancini, he may have another listener. Mr. Mancini, do you have more for us, or is it time to do a wrap here?
Yeah, let me get a quick one in from Pat from Terre Haute, Indiana. Basically says, does Vaseline help with erectile dysfunction? And we'll answer that real quick, and then we'll do a wrap.
I don't believe so. I have never heard of Vaseline helping in erectile dysfunction. I do not think so.
Okay.
Very good. Get the erectile dysfunction taken care of. And go ahead, Mr. Mancini.
Yeah, if we put a wrap on this in about a minute, and then we'll let everybody know how they can get a hold of both of you and preview next week, Doctor.
Beautiful. You know, I want to thank our listeners tonight on a very interesting topic. And you can see it's a lot of relevancy today, but indeed is multifaceted. There are many health areas that touch on the male organ, the male health. And I think going to an excellent urologist who's schooled in this can help solve the problem, but also eliminate disease entities that may be brewing that your other physicians may not have picked up. So, John, I want to thank you very, very much. Excellent discussion. And go ahead, Mark. Let's wrap it.
Okay, as we put a bow on this topic and everything, John, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you.
My email is jsbanerji@phhealthcare.org.
Good times on that one. And Dr. Greg Roscoe, as we give it over to you, your information, and we'll talk about what we got in store for next week at the same time.
Beautiful. Thank you again, John. Thank you very much, Mark. GJR MD 308@outlook.com. You know, next week we have a chest surgeon on talking about new advances in chest and lung surgery. There are some new things going on that I think I'd like our listeners to be aware of if they're having problems with the chest area and the lung. We have Dr. Rodney Lander now, who is an active surgeon down at Tampa General and has written extensively about these things, and we're bringing him on. So he should be a very interesting guest. He's been on the show before. We also have, if I could just elaborate quickly, we're going to talk about hepatitis this month. There's an increase in infectious disease with hepatitis. We also have Dr. Libby Smith coming on talking about vocal new remedies for voice loss and hoarseness. She's on later this month. We also have Marilyn Morales talking about her new book and about what she's doing with her legacy. So this should be great shows. So, Dr. John, thank you. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
Well,
Greg,
thank you guys
Mark.
Very much. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, or subscribe to podcasts. And we'll be back same time, same channel next week. Till then, have a blessed one. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for making us who we are. God bless you all.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
God bless.